a story a few weeks ago called Carl and the Corpse, where Carl had basically rebuilt the love of his life with wire and wax and spare bits of hair that he had collected while she decomposed in his bed. This is a story y'all want to revisit if you haven't already, but in the meantime, it got me thinking about other famous situations where people had stolen a corpse. And why? I'm sure you all know lots of famous people's parts have been stolen over the course of time. But today, we're going to discuss heads and brains. Oh, who steals them and why? Are you curious,
that's right,
Kim?
Why? Why in the heck would you steal somebody? Okay. Really? Other than the Abby Normal one from Young Frankenstein, I just don't get stealing a brain.
Well, let me tell you, it is a common occurrence. So here we go. Jeremy Bentham was an Enlightenment philosopher, best remembered for the theory of utilitarianism and animal rights. He was born in Spitalfields, London on the 15th of February in 1748, and he proved to be something of a child prodigy. While still a toddler, he was discovered sitting at his father's desk reading a multi-volume history of England and began to study Latin at the age of 3. This is important because it leads to the rest of his pathology. Oddly enough, on par with being a philosopher, he was famous for calling his cat the Reverend Sir John Langbourne.
Okay.
Yep. He also called his tea kettle Dicky, and he had a name for his walking stick, but I forget that now. Anyway, so he was a man of strong convictions and foresight. So when he decided that his taxidermied corpse should be put on display in a wooden box at the University College of London... After his death in 1832, his insane wishes were followed to the letter. Now, today, it's illegal to taxidermy a human body, but back in the day, all bets were off. So, before he died, eccentric philosopher Jeremy Bentham asked that his body be stuffed and wheeled out at parties to help his friends with their grief and to aid in scientific research. I'm here for your pleasure, Kim.
I can just see it. I had a boss that used to threaten to do that to me. He used to threaten to freeze dry me and stick me in the corner, so I'd always be there.
Oh, but wait, there's so much more. But the social reformer didn't stop there. He bequeathed 26 memorial rings to those he knew and admired, featuring a bust of himself in silhouette and strands of his hair. Now, scientists are on the hunt for Bentham's ring, of which only 6 have been found since his death in 1832. Researchers say the missing artifacts could be spread across the globe, and one was found in a jewelry shop. Guess where?
Austin.
No.
Where?
New Orleans!
New Orleans, that figures.
Yes! So, Subhadra Das, curator of the University College London Culture, said, Bentham revolutionized our idea of what death is. When Bentham donated his body for the advancement of science, it was considered a social taboo. But his ideas framed the Anatomy Act of 1832, which allowed medical practitioners and students to dissect donated bodies. So that's pretty cool, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He did a bunch of good stuff, but, you know, later on, people were not very respectful, which kind of sucks. So moving on. He was also famous for his idea of panopticon, which is a proposal for a prison in which every inmate can be watched by a guard in a central tower. Now, we all know how that works now, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So he was ahead of his time. He also helped establish Britain's first police force, the London Thames River Police, in 1800.
Wow.
Yeah, so pretty cool. The philosopher believed people should make themselves useful in both life and death and encouraged others to donate their bodies to medical science. Our Jeremy was a staunch atheist who described church teachings as nonsense on stilts and was opposed to a Christian burial. Here we're coming into the good stuff. So, before his death in 1832, he insisted his body was preserved as an auto icon I think he also kind of coined this term because I couldn't find where else it was originated. So let me just explain what an auto icon is. A dead body which is preserved, clothed, and displayed as though it is still living as a memorial to the deceased. So it made me think, oh my God, you know, think of all those creepy dudes that are in the Madame Tussauds, you know, the wax museum and stuff. So anyway, Bentham requested that his head be mummified using the process performed by Maori, the indigenous New Zealanders. The rest of his body, right, the rest of his body, or specifically his skeleton, would be stuffed with hay and adorned with Bentham's clothes. But once on display at the University College of London, instead of being treated like a dignified decaying statue that would inspire students and teachers alike, Bentham became the world's most morbid college mascot. Oh, his remains were preserved and displayed sitting down in a wooden case, i.e. the auto icon. His head, however, wound up looking too ghoulish to keep atop his body, so it was replaced with a creepy wax replica. Oh, geez. While his real head was kind of plopped on the floor, okay?
On the floor?
Yes, yes. Well, he's in like this glass case. You know how they used to put things in a glass case, right?
Yeah,
he's in this glass case and he's kind of just sitting on this chair, you know, and he's doing the man spled thing. He's planing, right? And so between his feet on the floor, there's his head. Now,
so it was too horrifying to keep on his body, so they took it off and stuck it between his feet on the floor.
Yes, yes. So
that was
yes.
better than having it on his shoulder.
Well, apparently, okay. Yes. And see, that wasn't the greatest indignity that our Jeremy had to endure. I mean, leave it to those crazy college kids, you know, to not be very respectful to an eccentric man. So during his undead tenure at University College of London, students began a long and storied tradition of stealing his noggin and taking it on disrespectful adventures. So some used it to play soccer with on the quad football, and others carried it all the way to the train station in Aberdeen, Scotland, where it was found stuffed in a luggage locker. Now
it's like a Monty Python sketch or something.
Well, you know, some folks might not be old enough to remember this, but there was a time when rival colleges, especially and sometimes high schools, but mostly colleges, they used to steal each other's mascots. So like any school pet, Jeremy's head.
At my college, it was the Shoney's big boy.
Oh, yeah.
The statue. They used to steal that all the time and find it. You'd find it on top of dorms or on, fraternity houses or whatever.
Poor man. So. his poor head was even kidnapped once by a rival college, the King's College of London, and held for ransom. So school administrators eventually had to hide the head in an undisclosed location for fear of theft and possible hacky sacking. Oh my God. So the head was eventually deemed by staff at University College London, where it had been displayed alongside his body since 1850, that it was just too scary for the public. So, but of course, these crazy kids keep finding it and stealing it for one thing or the other. So they put it away. Now, they put it away and they hid it for a while. But then his real head went back on display in a separate location from his body at the university for the first time in decades on October 2017 as a part of a new exhibition, which was a little bit against his wishes. That's not what he wanted his head to do. But I'm sure he didn't want him out there playing football with it either. So,
playing hacky sack. Yeah.
So, you know, I guess you could say Jeremy's two heads are no longer better than one. But meanwhile, there's a myth.
That was bad.
There's a myth that Bentham's auto icon still attends every UCL meeting and is noted as present but not voting. Now, While the myth is false, the auto icon did make an appearance in July of 2013 for the last council meeting that UCL's retired provost did attend. And I saw a picture of it, so we can list that picture. Oh, anyway. So let's see, moving on with more snatching rhymes and reasons. So next, we all know about Albert Einstein. But did you know, I bet he knew, Kim, did you know that his brain was stolen?
No, I did not, actually.
Well, let me explain you. Our story starts with a pathologist, Thomas Harvey, who was on call at Princeton Hospital, New Jersey on April the 18th, 1955. So Einstein, the founding father of relativity and creator of the equation E equals MC square, he just died after an abdominal aortic aneurysm ruptured, which happened a few days prior. It took him a couple days to die. So Harvey, the hero of our tale, performed the autopsy after Einstein's death and brought a small keepsake home with him. He brought home Einstein's brain, which he kept in his possession for the rest of his life.
In a jar of formaldehyde, no doubt.
He probably knew kind of sort of how to keep it, but you know. So yeah. Let me tell you what he did with it. Harvey kept Einstein's brain in a granola cookie jar for 40 years, guarding the genius's brain with his life.
Oh, jeez.
Neither loss of livelihood nor exile from the scientific community caused this pathologist to give up the stolen goods. Harvey used a 35mm camera to take dozens of black and white shots of the excised brain before slicing it into 240 times. The man was really obsessed with studying his hero's brain, although he wasn't really talented enough to make any true discoveries. When he finally gave up on solving the mystery himself, he decided to send it to scientists and hoped that he could uncover the secret of Einstein's genius. The scientist's name was Marion Diamond. Mr. Diamond received a mailed package from Harvey, the certified pathologist. The certified pathologist decided to take a different tack this time. He mailed the sampled brain tissue in a mayo jar. Oh, jeez. Oh, God. So he gets to leave his cookie jar and moving on. This is really distressing on several levels, as Einstein had clarified in his will that he wanted to be cremated so people wouldn't come to worship at my bones. So at least his brain was finally recovered, right?
Right, I guess. He kind of got demoted there, going from a cookie jar to a mayonnaise jar.
Well, you know, he'd slivered it up so many times. I don't know how much was left of it, really and truly, you know.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it was granola cookies. God only knows what.
Because now they could take a CT scanner and, you know, slice that puppy up virtually. And
well, that would be pretty cool, but we're still in a mayo jar. So next enters vampire.
Ooh.
In both the 1970s and most recently in 2015, the sacred resting place of German director F.W. Murnau. So he is the mastermind behind the horror classic Nosferatu. So in 1970s and in 1925, they were robbing his grave. Now, the famed director is credited with the first unauthorized cinematic adaptation of Bram Stoker's novel Dracula. And it was shot in 1922. So he was really way ahead of his time. And he is buried, what's left of him was buried in Stanisdorf Southwestern Cemetery outside of Berlin. Now, when the tomb was discovered, broken into, a candle left at the scene led to speculation that there were occult motives to the theft. So investigators suspect Murnau's corpse was part of a ceremony staged by Satanists or those practicing black magic. Since there were candles left behind in what appears to be kind of a celebration or some sort of ritual at the time. So fascination with Murnau and his legacy as a pioneering German expressionist only seems to have grown in the 8 decades since his death, because this last tampering of his grave was in 2015. Given the lasting power of Murnau's creation of the monster vampire Nosferatu, it's not hard to understand why an errant German Satanist would really want to make off with his skull, right?
Okay.
But who doesn't love a good vampire? And this being the first Dracula of its kind, well, you know. Anyway, the director's head / skull hasn't been recovered, so he's still floating around out there, from Satanists to presidents. As of 2018, the mystery of U.S. President John F. Kennedy's stolen brain has been solved. Did you know they stole his brain?
No, I did not.
I didn't either. Well, you would think that it was one of those conspiracy things and one of those stories, you know. But according to the secret U.S. government files, JFK's missing brain was, yes, indeed, stolen by Robert Kennedy.
Really? His own brother? Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
Why?
Well, after his assassination, he wanted to stop it from ever going on a display.
Oh, okay.
So he stole it. And it's only come out, you know, in the last 2 years, which is pretty crazy because he actually died a couple of years later. And I couldn't find where they found it, but
yeah, it was about 5 years later. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the whereabouts of JFK's brain have puzzled theorists for years. And after it was removed during the president's autopsy and later disappeared from the National Archives, conspiracists have always claimed the missing organ vanished to conceal evidence that Kennedy was not shot from the back by Lee Harvey Oswald, but from the front.
But wouldn't you be able to see, because people have seen pictures of him post-mortem, and his face is intact. There's nothing wrong with his face, at least in the ones I've seen. So it would seem to me if he was shot from the front, you know, there's going to be something there. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've all seen those things a million times. You'd think that it was pretty easy peasy, cut and dried. But at the time, I'm sure there was so much commotion and his brother just was covering the bases, and it's politics, right? So who knows? Yeah, yeah. There could be a million reasons for why he was trying to cover up. But anyway, like I was saying, we could pretty much go on and on. I was really shocked how much I found, how many people I found that, you know, had been stolen, basically. It seems like most of the other ones were for ransom. For example, there were several schemes to seize Abraham Lincoln's body after his assassination. And then shortly after Elvis's death, four men were arrested trying to break into his mausoleum. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that's why Elvis was reburied at Graceland. And if y'all have ever been to Graceland, you know, he's buried in the back in the garden with his, at his house now.
Yeah, he's in the backyard.
Yeah, with his mom and daddy.
Right.
And it's, you know, there's three graves there, aren't there? And his mama and daddy too.
I think it's his mom and his daddy and him, I think. I think it's all three of them.
I think it's just the three of them. And they're the big O, like, if I remember it right, I've been there a million times and now I can't remember it. It's like an engraved bronze plate on top of the tomb or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like the one for Stevie Ray Vaughan and all those guys like that. Yeah,
all those kind of like, bronzy kind of deals. But anyway, okay. So also, Charlie Chaplin's body was dug up for ransom, which is funny because his fourth wife, refused to pay. She basically said, "Oh, Charlie would have thought that was ridiculous."
Funny.
So,
yeah.
No. She said he would have thought that's ridiculous. So, no. So,
well, did
anyway,
they ever get his body back?
I'm sure they did. I don't remember exactly what it took, but yes, it did. They did get it back. And then Ava Perone, her body was buried and reburied for decades. And then a couple of years ago, Enzo Ferrari's body was almost stolen from the family tomb. And the prospective thieves, they got caught, but they were plotting. They wanted a $10 million ransom. So, you know, who knew? Brain. I tell you, Kim, there it is. Crazy stuff, huh?
Wow.
Got any questions?
That's just really bizarre. I don't know why you'd want to steal a dead body, but okay.
Well,
I mean, other than Carl. Carl was a special case. Carl was in love.
Carl was in
love.
He couldn't
let her go.
I know.
He wasn't trying to get money off of anybody or put anything on exhibit. He just wanted her there with him. Poor guy.
I know. It's just, you know, I don't get it, but this apparently happens a lot. A lot. You know.
It doesn't shock me somehow, though, you know.
It obviously it obviously happens to famous people a lot more than regular folks. But, hey, I guess my really favorite one is the first one, you know. My favorite is that he's just our little Jeremy.
He thought a lot of himself, too, and he thought everybody needed to take his cue, right? He just really seemed like he was high on himself.
Well, you could look at it like that. I mean, I kept thinking to myself, gee, is he just being thoughtful to the people he cares about, that he wants to, that he wants to make sure that they're not missing him? But at the same time, remember, he wanted them to use his body for science.
Well, I'm not even talking about the rings. I'm talking about he wanted to be
stuffed and stayed. Taxidermy. Yeah.
Taxidermied and displayed for everybody's pleasure.
Well, I don't know. I mean, is that his sense of humor, maybe? I mean, personally, if I had enough money, I think it would be a scream. Because I really, you know, who cares what happens after it all? No, we've gone down this road before, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
But
we won't bore our listeners with it again. Because
no, but you know, I mean, I don't think that the poor man's head needs to be tossed around like at the National Cup.
Oh no,
Cup
that was
anything.
Not cool. I'm not talking about that. That was not cool. But that's. You know, that's not surprising.
No, it's not. It's really not, especially not for that time of life, because people weren't as they weren't as uptight and weird. In fact, what I read through all this is that they would have said, the Victorians especially would have said, that we were a really cold bunch of folks now, because we don't do these more elaborate mourning rituals of having this.
Yes, I absolutely. Yes, they would.
The
memorial type of thing.
We don't go to the graveyards and have picnics with our people. We don't wear our mourning gear. We don't drape our mirrors. We don't use the death memorial jewelry anymore. I think the closest they're coming to any of that is where they're starting to make some of the people's ashes into diamonds, even your pet's ashes into diamonds, which I personally think is kind of cool. But my mother always wanted to have herself made into a diamond and make sure, you know, that John gave it to her his next wife. But I don't think John will ever remarry, so whatever. We'll make my mom into a diamond.
Anyway.
Any questions, comments, philosophies? It's Friday,
yep,
man.
It is. It's weekend time.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can kick back, have a couple of margaritas or a pitcher, and think about what they want to do for the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can be mummified.
Do you want to be stuffed?
You can be mummified. You could be taxidermied. Although, you know, I don't know that I would go with the taxidermy. So anyway.
You can be cremated. You can be buried. You can.
Well, I don't want to be put in a mayonnaise jar, but that's just me. So there you go.
No, I'd rather my brain wasn't separated from my body, I think. Mm. So,
well, there it is, you guys. So thank you again for sharing some time with us.
And we will see you on Tuesday.
See you Tuesday. Bye, y'all.
Bye.